नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We shall read one verse from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 16, the divine and demoniac natures. Text 7. Please repeat. Pravritim cha nivritim cha. Janana vidur asura, na socham na pichacharo, na satyam teshu vidyate. Pravritim, acting properly, cha. Also, nivritim, not acting improperly, cha, and jana, persons, na, never, vidu, no, asura, of demonic quality. Na, never. Socham, cleanliness. Na, nor. Api, also. Cha, and. Achara, behavior. Na, never. Satyam, truth. Teshu, in them. Vidyate, there is. Translation. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In every civilized human society, there is some set of scriptural rules and regulations which is followed from the beginning. Especially among the Aryans, those who adopt the Vedic civilization and who are known as the most advanced civilized peoples. Those who do not follow the scriptural injunctions are supposed to be demons. Most of them do not know them. And even if some of them know, they have not the tendency to follow them. They have no faith, nor are they willing to act in terms of the Vedic injunctions. The demons are not clean, either externally or internally. One should always be careful to keep his body clean by bathing, brushing teeth, shaving, changing clothes, and so on. As far as internal cleanliness is concerned, one should always remember the holy names of God and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The demons neither like nor follow all these rules for external and internal cleanliness. As for behavior, there are many rules and regulations guiding human behavior, such as the Manu Sanghita, which is the law of the human race. Even up to today, those who are Hindus follow the Manu Sanghita. Laws of inheritance and other legalities are derived from this book. Now, in the Manu Sanghita, it is clearly stated that a woman should not be given freedom. That does not mean that women are to be kept as slaves, but they are like children. Children are not given freedom, but that does not mean that they are kept as slaves. The demons have now neglected such injunctions, and they think that women should be given as much freedom as men. However, this has not improved the social condition of the world. Actually, a woman should be given protection at every stage of life. She should be given protection by the father in her younger days, by the husband in her youth, by the grown-up sons in her old age. This is proper social behavior according to the Manu Sanghita. But modern education has artificially devised a puffed-up concept of womanly life, and therefore marriage is practically now an imagination in human society. Nor is the moral condition of women very good now. The demons, therefore, do not accept any instruction which is good for society. And because they do not follow the experience of great sages and the rules and regulations laid down by the sages, the social condition of the demoniac people is very miserable. Translation again. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, nor proper behavior, nor truth is found in them. Now, why did I choose a verse about demons to discuss before an audience of devotees? I can think of two reasons. One is that the modern world is more or less demonic, and we live in the modern world. And we are not beyond its influence. Generally, unless a devotee is very strong in Krishna consciousness, which really means that the devotee has strong association, he or she will be influenced by the demonic atmosphere around him or her. And we have heard from authorities that there is always a struggle between the divine and demonic natures. It is said that in Satwa Yuga, there were demons lived on certain planets, and devotees lived on certain planets, and there was interplanetary war between the devotees and the demons. It is said that in Treta Yuga, devotees appeared in certain families and demons appeared in certain families, and there was war between the divine families and the demoniac families. In Treta Yuga, which is the age prior to the present age of Kali Yuga, when Lord Krishna appeared, the divine and the demoniac appeared within the same family, and therefore within, say, the descendants of Kuru, you had devotees and demons fighting with each other. And in Kali Yuga, the divine and the demonic exist within the same person. So we all have the demonic tendency within us, and we also have the divine tendency within us. And the most important factor that determines whether the divine flourishes or the demonic flourishes is association. And therefore, the scriptures insist give, make very strong statements about the benefits of associating with devotees, and also the hardships of associating with non-devotees. For example, on the one hand, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra kai, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. That just by a moment's association with a sadhu or a devotee, one can attain all perfection. And on the other side, asat sang tyaga e vaishnava vachar. The devotee avoids the association of asat. Devotees are sat. Sat means the truth, that which is true is eternal, the eternal truth, sat. And therefore we want to associate with sat. We want to associate with the absolute truth, and we want to associate with devotees who are in touch with the absolute truth. And that is called satsanga. In fact, there's one verse in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that says that the benefit of associating with devotees who are associated with the Supreme Lord is greater than the benefit of associating with the Lord directly. Bhagavat Sanghi Sangataha. Because one can see the Lord and still be a demon. Kamsa saw the Lord, but he remained a demon. So just associating with the Lord doesn't mean that you won't be a demon, because when Krishna was present, so many demons saw him, fought with him, spoke with him, but they remained demons. So the process by which one can become a devotee and make advancement in Krishna consciousness is to associate with devotees who themselves are associated with the Lord. Bhagavat Sanghi Sangataha. One gets more benefit. And on the other hand, one should avoid the association of asat. asat sang tyaga e vaishnavachar stri sangi eka sadhu krishna bhakta ar. And here Lord Chaitanya mentions two categories of asat, those who are too attached to sense gratification and those who are just not at all devotees. We should avoid intimate association with them. And there's a verse in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that is sort of the converse of the verse that I just mentioned from the first canto, which says that it's worse to associate with men who are attached to sense gratification than it is to associate with the objects of sense gratification. Because you may associate with the object of sense gratification, but it might not occur to you to exploit it in a bad way. But if you associate with people who are attached to sense indulgence, they will tell you how to exploit the objects of the senses, and that's worse. So, as devotees, we always have to be careful to associate with other devotees and avoid the association of non-devotees. Otherwise, by association with the demonic, our own demonic tendencies can become aggravated. So does this mean that we should live in a bubble? I heard in Japan or someplace, they actually have these like bubbles they get in when they fly on airplanes and things so they won't get contaminated. So does this mean that we live in a bubble? What do we do? But I guess in a sense that's a secondary question, because I need to make one more point about the distinction. Srila Prabhupada has a disciple named Kirtanananda Swami. And Kirtanananda Swami, he was concerned about the way Prabhupada used the word demon. He said, if you use the word demon, or if we use the word demon, people won't like it. You know, people they'll become discouraged. They'll go away. They won't like it. And Srila Prabhupada replied that you have to understand the difference between a devotee and a demon. Unless you understand the difference between a devotee and a demon, you cannot make any spiritual advancement. It was very heavy. And then finally, at the end, Kirtanananda Swami said, well, can demons become devotees? And Srila Prabhupada immediately replied, oh yes, if they chant Hare Krishna, demons can become devotees. So this was actually the point that I wanted to make. And that is that we are surrounded by a demoniac civilization, not particularly in South Africa, but everywhere in the world, more or less. We're surrounded by people who are considered demons from the Vedic point of view, because they don't know what to do or what not to do. But we cannot allow them to remain demons. That is my main point here. We cannot allow them to remain demons. We cannot live in our own world, as beautiful as it is, and let the world around us continue on its path towards hell. Today when I was on my morning walk, one very nice young African boy approached me. It was very interesting because there were a group of them in the ocean. And as I was walking back in their direction, they all they were coming out of the ocean and I guess going to shower and get dressed and so on. One of the boys, he was sort of standing by the shore of the ocean with his feet in the water, sort of. I thought, well, maybe he wants to have the water wash his feet off or something. He was sort of playing footsie with the water. And I could see he wasn't coming out. I thought, well, maybe he's waiting for me. And sure enough, as I approached, he came out of the water. And he came up to me, and he said, can you get me a job? He was a very, very sweet, gentle, simple soul. I mean, if I could have taken him with me to California, I would have. So I said, what kind of work can you do? He said, I can be a gardener. So I said, I will, I'll try to help you. I have to speak to some people now. But he was very, very sweet, very gentle, and very unpretentious. When I said simple, I meant unpretentious. You know, he said that he doesn't want to have to steal. He doesn't want to have to end up in jail. He wants a job. And I couldn't catch some of it because of the roar of the ocean but I think what he said was that his father is in jail, and what he definitely said is that, so he has to be the breadwinner for his mother. And then I asked him how old he is. He said he's 16. Although I would have thought younger. But maybe that was because he was so simple and innocent. And then he said, well, actually, I can only work on the weekends or when there's no school. Otherwise, I have to go to school, which is good. So I was thinking, how many young boys are there like him? There must be more. Then I thought of another devotee who had visited South Africa, and a lady had approached her and said, can you take me to America? And th- the devotee said that person was really a very nice person, really a very nice person. But that, but she just wasn't getting any opportunity here. Anyway, that's maybe a bit of a digression, but I mention it because when the boy approached me, I thought of the other incident, and then I thought, how many nice people are there that are just sort of struggling, and what are we doing for them? And I thought of the farms. Now, of course, that's not an easy solution, but it's an appropriate one because, you know, I think their original economy was agrarian. Actually, most of the world's economy was agrarian originally. And Srila Prabhupada also said the majority of the world should be engaged in producing food grains and protecting cows. And then there will be some administrators above them and some spiritual guides above them. And our god brother, Tejas Prabhu, has received a lot of instruction from Srila Prabhupada about self-sufficient farm communities and about Varnashram Dharma in general, and the two do go together. And he was saying how hard it is to get devotees to work on farms, because they've been so subjected to the demonic propaganda. He asked me, how many advertisements do you think a child has seen by the time he or she is 12 years old? And I forget what the answer is, but it was a staggering number. On television, just on television alone. And from the very beginning, they are taught in a subtle way that material things can make you happy, material things can make you popular, and if you don't have material things, you won't be happy and you won't be popular. And, you know, devotees sort of unknowingly buy into that idea. And he also said that the idea goes along with the modern society in which people do not live on the land. He said when people lived on the land, generation after generation, there was continuity in the relationships. Generations of the same families would live together in the same village. And the whole village was like an extended family. And like with family, you can be yourself. You know, they love you just because you're part of the family. You don't have to impress them with the clothes you wear or the car you drive or the, you know, jewelry you have or whatever. Your family, they love you just because you're family. You don't have to do anything to impress. But with industrialization and urbanization, people have left the village, left the land, come to the city. They don't know anybody. And they have to make an impression fast. And how do they make an impression? Well, the advertising tells them you make an impression by wearing this clothes, driving this car, wearing this wristwatch, and on and on and on. And we buy into that. We have to compete. We're in the city. We have to compete. You have to impress people, so you have to get all the things that we think will impress them. So it's a terrible situation. And we all suffer from it. I mean, some may suffer more than others, but we all suffer from it. And there's also the question of what happens to us when we get old. This is a big question in ISKCON. And I'm also concerned about the care of devotees when they get old and when they come to the final stage. But what we're doing is sort of an emergency measure, because of the way things are. But in the original culture or the original economic system, people would be with their families, you know, on the land. There would be opulence from the land itself. And it wasn't expensive to maintain an old person. And because of, you know, the immediate family and extended family and, like, the whole village is like a family, there would be people that would care for the aged up till the end. It was just part of the natural arrangement. But now we've sort of broken the natural arrangement, and, you know, you come to the cities and compete for jobs and try to buy things to impress people. But how many people really care for us? You know, everybody's competing with each other and everybody's trying to impress each other, but how many people really care for you? There are maybe not that many. So we have to have special institutions, you know, to take care of the aged and so on. And that's certainly better than nothing, but the original arrangement, Krishna's arrangement, the natural arrangement, is to live on the land and just generation after generation, you have your family. You're with your family, and your family loves you, and they care for you, and you don't have to impress them, and have to impress you, and just love each other and be Krishna conscious. So that is really what we should work for. It's difficult, not just externally, but as I mentioned, internally it's difficult, because we ourselves are sort of bought into the false ideas of the materialistic, competitive, commercialized society. Even without knowing it, it's just there from the beginning, and we've been influenced by it unknowingly. So these are very deep topics. They're very serious issues. It's like our brother Brahmananda Prabhu, when he was describing the early days of ISKCON, he said it was basically 16 rounds and the four principles and Maya. To what extent has there really been a revolution in our lives? And to what extent are we just pious demons? chanting 16 rounds and following the principles and coming to the festivals and then the rest of the time. Of course, I know you're not demons, but that was just a joke. So, like I said, these are serious issues. They're deep questions. The essence of everything is chanting the holy names, which we will do soon. We just have to like chant and chant and chant and chant, and that really cleanses the heart. Cheto Darpano Marjanam. That brings us out of this materialistic atmosphere, at least for some time. And the more we chant and the more deeply we chant, the more we will be fixed in that, and the less we'll be affected by the materialistic atmosphere. And as Srila Prabhupada said in the purport, that will make us clean. Chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And again, as Srila Prabhupada said to Kirtananda Swami, when Kirtananda Swami said, can the demons become devotees? Srila Prabhupada said, yes. They chant Hare Krishna, they can become devotees. So both for our own sake, to keep devotional aspects of ourselves more prominent and the other aspect more subdued, and for the sake of others who don't know what to do, what not to do. They don't know how to keep clean. They just don't know. They're ignorant. They don't know. And if we don't tell them, who's going to tell them? The schools aren't going to tell them, because the schools are part of the same system. Their parents, in most cases, won't tell them because their parents are also products of the same system. So who's going to tell them? It's us. We're the only ones. We have the knowledge by Srila Prabhupada's grace, so we have to share that knowledge with others. Always remain fixed in chanting, and the shelter of the Association of Strong Devotees, we can share our knowledge with them, and we won't be affected by them, but they'll be affected by us. Otherwise, there's no hope for them, and we are not fulfilling our responsibility. When we receive knowledge from the guru, we have a responsibility. We have a debt, and we have a responsibility. And the debt is discharged. I mean, it can never really be discharged fully, but the debt is discharged by sharing the knowledge with others. And that's our responsibility. So that is my humble appeal to all of you present tonight, that you try to practice the chanting and apply the knowledge in your own life as fully as possible, and really share it with others in the world around us, not just our limited circle of friends and associates, but with everyone. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.